James chapter 1, verse 19. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Well, as you know, there are very different kinds of personality groups around and in this room. So some people shoot first, ask questions later. Other people, they never shoot, they dither, they never get round to anything. And most of us are somewhere between that. And I don't mean that we're balanced. I mean that sometimes we shoot first when we should have asked some questions, and then another time we dither and we just get it wrong. How do you balance those things out? And that's what James is going to help us with, and particularly this passage. How do we balance things out? How do we act wisely? Now, before we get to that, I need to make a link with last week. So last week, Stephen took us through the opening verses, which is like James's overture to the rest of the letter. In fact, really, the bit we're looking at now is the closing bars. And Stephen sort of flagged up where we're going. I just want to draw attention to a couple of bits because we're going to go there again. He gave us a fairly useful working definition of the word wisdom. It keeps on being mentioned. That wisdom is taking the knowledge of God that you have and putting it into practice. So you know some stuff, put it into practice. And it should be that you want to grow in knowledge of God and therefore live it out. Now, sometimes people will say, I don't want it to all get too complicated. I have a simple faith. Now, knowledge here, in fact, anywhere in the Bible, is not an academic thing. It is a personal thing. So imagine wooing some romantic interest. So when I first met Glad, she wasn't allergic to chocolate. That seems to be something that's developed. But imagine I was wooing her now, and I very thoughtfully give her a posh box of Thorntons, and she sort of politely accepts. And a friend goes, just for next time, she's allergic. Try flowers. And I go, oh, I don't want to get down into detail. I don't want the depth. It shows sincerity of the heart, doesn't it? I don't need the detail. Well, that would just be weird, because you're saying, well, do you want to know this person? Do you want to know what pleases them? And so on. And so it is with God. The difference being is God is so much more profound than we are. So it is worth growing in our knowledge of God, and that will be stretching. It's worth being uncomfortable sometimes, whatever level we're at. There's always going to be something that you could be stretched with as you get to know God. And that will then, as we saw last week, affect our behaviour. So we don't want to opt for ignorance, do we? That would be an odd thing, because knowledge is relational. Now, James is a preacher. And what we see through the book is he keeps on taking what we might call Old Testament wisdom. He takes very strong ideas from Old Testament wisdom and applies it to the church, but through the lens of Christ. So he takes it and reads it through Christ to the church. Now, when we think about wisdom, so we thought a working definition for James, when we think about wisdom in the Old Testament, we mean something distinct, something that's distinct from commands. And people often say, well, it's not, you know, a command is different from wisdom. And that's true, but they're not morally neutral. So a couple of quotes from wisdom literature, from Proverbs and from Psalms. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, so the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. So notice, it's knowing God is the beginning of knowledge, and fools don't want wisdom or discipline. Psalm 14:1, it says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Who says there's no God? Well, a fool says that. So wisdom and folly are related to our response to God So there's a spiritual and moral dimension. So before we get into James, I'll give you a couple of worked examples to make a point. So two simple things from the wisdom literature, something about marriage and something about money. In the Bible, there are commands about who not to marry. So I could give you a list of here the sort of people you should not marry. But there's loads of stuff it doesn't tell us about how tall, how big, what colour hair, the sort of personality you should marry. When we come to the wisdom books, it kind of tells us how a good marriage works. And it talks about attraction, being mutually attentive, and friendship. So if you're making a decision and you're biblically, your commands are in place, but you're not attracted to them, there's no mutual care, and you don't get on so well, to marry that person would be foolish. And before you know, if you're sitting there going, well, duh, you'd be amazed how many people do it. Money, there are a few commands about money, but there's lots about money. There's lots about wisdom, about the consequences, how hard you work, how well you plan, or debt. So debt in the Bible is not wrong. You may need debt. You may need a loan for a house or a car. But it warns us that the more debt we have, the more we lose control, because you need to repay them. So you have to balance out. But clearly there comes a point where you have a foolish loan. There's foolish borrowing. So with both issues, the reason why I use those issues is because you can't come up with the same answer for everybody. It's not like murder. Is it okay for Stefan to murder, but for Tom not to murder? Well, that's obvious. But in terms of how you spend your money and who you marry, clearly there's not the same answer. But in both issues, you can make wise choices and foolish choices. But if you choose folly, with all the information, sometimes things with hindsight, you go, well, if I knew that, I would have done something differently. But with the knowledge that you have, if you then choose folly, that has a spiritual and moral dimension. And we saw last week that we're to ask God for wisdom and that he is generous. So this will come up later through the book, but God is the source of knowledge. He imparts it. So we ask him and we ask expectantly. And we saw that the way that that will happen is through his word. And so read it. Sermons. We might ask Christians. So the role of an elder is to, even if they don't preach and things like that, is to apply God's word to our lives. A wise friend, someone who's been around the block a bit and they're a Christian, they'll give you advice. But ignoring wisdom is a moral and spiritual issue. So if you're honestly going, I don't know what to do with this bit of my life, I don't really understand God's word, and you say to, maybe say to an elder, what do you do? And you go, well, let's weigh it up, this. And then you go to a wise Christian friend, and they say this, and you go, well, people at CPC, I mean, they're all a bit weird anyway. So you go to a friend at another church, and they say the same thing, and then you ignore them. There is a spiritual and moral dimension to it. So in wisdom, we want to grow. How? Well, that's what we're going to look at as we go through the book of James. And there are key areas in this passage that are flagged up that we're going to come to again as we go through James in a bit more detail. And often I try and have sort of headings or tags, stepping stones to help us through. And I thought about having polite ones, but I've come up with rude ones that will help you remember. But when I first came, every time I told you were sinners, you seemed to like it. So my headings are, the theme of where I'm going is shut up, don't dither, and have a faith that works. So my 3 points are shut up, don't dither, have a faith that works. So firstly, shut up, verses 19 to 21. What is the purpose of listening? Why do you listen? You're listening right now. As the airwaves, you know the physics behind it, so the airwaves are hitting your ears and things are resonating and your brain makes some sense of them. What is the point of that activity? Is it that you will understand something? I might disagree, but is it so you understand, or so that you can make a response to it? After you have heard something or read something, what is the first thing you do with that? And the image we sort of get here is someone has heard and now they're kicking off. So, but look at verse 20. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Anger of man doesn't produce the righteousness of God. And so, we were told in verse 19, be quick to listen. Do that. Be keen to listen. Quick to listen. Slow to speak. slow to anger. So don't cut off people. Don't reply straight away. Don't get cross just yet. Shut your mouth. Put the reply in draft and wait. Josiah's reading a school book called The Shadow Spinner, and this is a quote from it. It says, "My auntie Chava used to tell me to chew my words before letting them out. 7 times, Margin, she would say. Chew on them 7 times. If you let your words go buzzing out of your mouth like bees, she always told me, they will come back and sting you. The trouble was, I couldn't resist letting them out." There's a quote you may have heard before. It's been attributed to both Abraham Lincoln and Mark Twain, which is, "Better to remain silent and be thought a fool. Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt." Now, if you're chatty, and some of us are more chatty than others, be careful. So a thing that you may have noticed with me is I find it very hard to speak without my hands. First time I ever went to a hairdresser, it was impossible to explain what I wanted, even though I only have a short back and sides. And I also find it very hard to speak with my mouth closed. So thoughts kind of, there's this kind of a process that my brain needs this and this to be moving in order for anything to function in here. That's okay, but be mindful. And what you may notice, if you ask me a difficult question, how the first couple of sentences don't have much content. That's because I'm processing what the bit with content that's going to happen later. But that's okay. But think about what you're saying, because sometimes when you're not thinking, a lot of damage is done. You know, you've heard when I lived in the... I know some of you are from the north of the country. Tom said to me, don't confuse our friendliness with our nosiness, which I liked. And one of the catchphrases in the north is, we speak our mind. That's not always something to be proud of. What comes to mind in saying it is not always, it's also not true, but it's not always something to be proud of. A quick response, once words leave your mouth, they take a life of their own that you have no control over. A bit like children, really. Once they're out, they kind of are autonomous beings. Words have that effect. They go out and they start doing their own thing, and they have impacts on others. It's a relationship thing, it's a trust thing, and you can't see how it's going to go. So you speak to one person there and you think that's it, but actually it then affects a relationship over here between these two people because of the sequence of events that unfold, because of trust issues. We find it hard to trust people because of what someone over there said. We find it hard to trust someone over here. So our words have a massive impact. Once they leave our mouths, they just do their own thing. And I've seen this in every church, including here, where there's an impact where someone goes, well, how did we get into this? Why has this person left the church? Or why is that person so angry with that person? You're kind of going, because 2 months ago you said that to them and it's kind of gone round to this thing. Of course you didn't mean that to happen, but it's happened. You comment on one person or one thing and it has impacts in ways that you never imagined. So be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Don't project your fears and suspicions onto other people's words. What are they actually saying? So you may have had this experience. You've said something, someone's jumped down your throat, and you're kind of thinking, well, I suppose grammatically you could have taken that, but clearly that's not what I meant. And sometimes, how did you even get those words to that meaning? So we listen. Don't project our suspicions or fears onto another. There is a time to speak. There is a time to be angry. Sometimes when you're angry, it's worth asking, why am I angry about this and not something else? And often it says something about us. We're often most angry about the things that we do or suspicious about things that lie in our own hearts. And there is a time to speak. There is a time for anger. But first, slow down and shut up. Now, what specifically are we meant to be hearing in verse 21? Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. So notice it is moral. We're to put off our old self. Thought about that a bit last week. And receive the implanted word. I think it's a key phrase. It's like something Stephen drew attention to at the end of last week, verse 18. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits for his creatures. So, contrary to what people sometimes say, James does not teach salvation by works. So, people think you've got to balance Paul with James. Now, Paul has lots of ethical implications, applying the law and that sort of thing. And James teaches that we are saved by receiving the word and having it implanted into us. But then it grows and impacts our lives and brings fruit and evidence, and more of that to come. So how do you listen and how do you speak? When you're in a conversation, when you're in a meeting, it could be at home or work or church, in a sermon, like now, when you're reading the Bible, it's being read to you, how do you listen? How do you reply? Well, we need to receive wisdom from James, that we sit on what we hear, that we wait a day, that we ask a clarifying question, that we put... In fact, you may have noticed a lot of this in the news. Whichever way you vote, there's a lot of deliberate misunderstanding, isn't there? You deliberately misinterpret what people say. So we ask clarifying questions. We put the email in draft before we click send. And maybe at the end of the service, when you think what happens, what we're doing, and we've all got the theology right with this, but we've heard God's word read, we've sung things from God's word, and then it's preached and applied to us. And then we're going to have tea and talk about football, which is fine. But maybe it's good to just pause before we do that. Before we go through tea and coffee, just to spend a moment and let it sink in. But don't dither. Verses 2 to 25. So if the first point warns us not to respond too quickly, this point responds, there's a time to respond, there is a time to act. Verse 22, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. So James has a pattern that I've put up there, which is the pattern of the Christian life, which is birth, growth, development. So birth, the word brings forth life. It's implanted and it grows as its birth. Then there's growth. Continue to hear and obey and let that word do its work. And development. And the areas of development, which we'll come back to in a moment, is speech, concern for others, and purity. And I called this series Faith That Works. And that's a deliberate double play. Our faith works, as in it does what it says on the tin. It's real. It does its stuff. But it works. If you have real faith, you put it to work. And faith leaves its evidence. Verses 23 to 25. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he looks like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. So there's a contrast here, and it's a comical image of looking in a mirror, of someone looking in the mirror and then going away and going, what colour eyes have I got? Well, you just can't imagine it happening. I did go for an interview once and then just doing this and realising I hadn't shaved. But by and large, you don't look in the mirror and forget what you look like. So are you that sort of person, or do you hear the word and do? As he puts it here, you look into the law and you do, where you find liberty and blessing. So there seems to be a difference between know and know. You know, there's sort of a knowledge of a kind of orthodox variety, a passing a test sort of thing, and an experiential knowledge. Are you going to live that out? What evidence are you leaving that this is real for you? In a few churches I've been involved with, we've had theologians in them, or people who call themselves that, and they've done lots of postgraduate stuff, sort of stuff Stefan's done. They write resources for denominations or parachurch groups, and they're a pain in the neck. They were difficult people, and they would do and say things I think most of you would find shocking. So there's knowledge. And there's knowledge. You know, if you've ever played football or a team sport, have you met people who talk a good game? They talk a lot. I don't talk very much when I play football because of the embarrassment it causes when I receive the ball. You know, so they shout where everyone should go and then they trip over the ball and go, good ball. And you go, you're rubbish, but you talk a lot. about the game. And there are Christians like that, aren't they? They talk a good game, but they don't deliver. So you meet people who are very opinionated about this, that, and the other in church, but then you go once a month, or whatever it is. You might think about how you apply gravity, something we'd all agree on. Gravity, you don't even give it much thought, but you apply it all the time, how you carry things, because gravity affects how we do, what we do with stuff. And it's worth finding out with things that we don't aren't so evident, aren't so obvious to us. So if you're going to invest your money, if you're going to invest in a relationship, you'd want to know something about where you're putting your trust before you make the practical outworkings. And so it is with God. Now, he's worth investing in, and it's worth maturing, but you need knowledge to do that. And that knowledge then goes into practice. So birth, growth, development. Is there evidence with you, and we're all at different stages in our walk with the Lord, but is there evidence of those things, of birth, of growth, of development? Faith works. So shut up, but don't dither. Rather have a faith that works. Look at verses 26 to 27. If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Faith works, but it must be put to work. You might be surprised by the word religion there. It's a trendy thing to say nowadays. I've said it myself. I'm not religious, I have a relationship. It's not about religion, it's a relationship. The kind of sentiment is good, but it's not biblical. The Bible talks about what we do as a religion, but that there are two religions, God's and man's, or true and false. So man's religion would include quasi-Christianity, other religions, and atheism, because the most religious people you meet are atheists, and agnostics, because of their commitment to not knowing is unbelievable. So he's saying, if you are religious, if you are the real deal, you'll be consistent, or at the very least, growing in consistency. So maturity is growing in knowledge and living it out. A while ago, I was listening to two friends talking about hymns. It's not from this church, and the content of hymns, and I couldn't disagree with both of them more. So one of them was making a point that it really matters, which is right, really matters about the content of our hymns, the words we sing. It's just the words he wants to sing is heretical. And the other one was saying, well, no, it's all from the heart. It's just from the heart. I don't think God minds what I sing as long as it comes from the heart, to which I had to bite my tongue, following James 1, bite my tongue saying, shall we say, you know, at the end of the sermon, we will now sing, stand to sing the locomotive, or something like that. Of course it matters what we sing, even if it's from the heart. These things all connect, don't they? Our heart, our mind, our actions connect. If we disconnect them, we'll do and think all kinds of strange things. So we all need to mature, but maybe in different ways, in our knowledge, in our living. Some people, the emphasis, their weak spot will be more one thing than the other, because we all naturally lean in different directions, but we all need to mature. If you like to be very practical, but you lack knowledge, then you'll leap into the wrong things, and you'll say the wrong things, and you'll do damage. If you have like learning lots of things, but you don't act on it, James's question to you is it for real? Do you really know it if you're not acting on it? You always act on gravity. You don't leap off buildings and such like. Do you know this stuff that you say you know? And there are three areas needing consistency, which I'll just flag them up now, but we're going to come back to them in future weeks in James and look at them in turn. So one of them is speech. We've thought about already, and it'll come up again in verse 26. Care for others and purity. So in speech in verse 26, if you're not developing in this area, if you're not pausing and thinking, if you're speaking quickly, I don't mean some of us, I have to fight to speak at a sensible rate, but I don't mean that, but if you're too quick to speak, if you're hearing slowly, if you're keener to speak than to listen, James says your faith is worthless. Care for others, verse 27. You can be very moral. So you've got the morality of finances, the morality of sexual ethics, and purity of thought. You can be very sound. You know why you're Presbyterian or why you're not Presbyterian but come to a Presbyterian church. You can be very sound in all these areas. But if you don't care for those who are in need, James questions that you are that sound. And purity, verse 27, end of verse 27, talks about from being unstained from the world. James is going to talk about this some more. The world in James means fake wisdom. The fake wisdom found in our culture apart from Christ, apart from the Bible. As I was preparing this, I was reading some books on James. An observation from one of them was that in the past, Christians were reactive. Christians just reacted to the world. So some parts of Christendom are still like this. So the world is okay with drinking alcohol. So we will become TT. The world listens to music with guitars. So we will not have guitars. And the favourite, it wasn't in the book, but I do remember reading something old about the cinema, spelt with an S. So you cannot go to the cinema without being stained and becoming corrupt. Now, we look at that and just go, it's just ridiculous. If you don't think that's ridiculous, we'll talk about it afterwards. But but we've gone the other way. We now don't take any of this seriously, and we now join in. And, of course, we need wisdom to tell the difference between when we're being reactionary and when we're just blending in, because we are part of our culture, and so things just seem normal to us. And they leave us, use James' phrase, they leave us stained. So we need to be not reactive, but discerning and wise. And the next few weeks, as we go through James, we'll focus in on these issues and how we get on as a church. And we'll hopefully become more wise. Now, from what we looked at, the questions today are about hearing and responding, speech and anger, hearing that leads to doing, and consistency. So make sure you hear. Make sure you're listening to others and to God as the word is imparted to us. For those who shoot first and ask questions later, for those who dither, for those who shoot first and dither, how do you mature and get a balance with this? Well, it's wisdom and maturity that is a growth in knowledge and then a consistency with that knowledge. And I think people find this very threatening because no one likes to be the daft one in the room. So if you're doing something like Christianity Explored, some people think that is that's a basics thing. Some people like it as a refresher. If someone's coming in fresh, they go, wow, this is rocket science to me. And so it should be like that all through our Christian life, that once we think for a start, be wary if you ever think you've got it. But we should always be willing to be a bit stretched, to be a bit uncomfortable. One thing I noticed when in the previous two churches I worked in, which are in poorer areas, but have some professionals in the congregation, is sometimes it was easier to teach people who'd left school at 14 than people with professions, because they were used to feeling uncomfortable about people talking about things. People who think they know stuff are the ones that are often uncomfortable, unless you're very secure. So it's okay to feel a bit threatened sometimes, that things, oh, this is stretching me, that's good. Because we want to grow in our knowledge, and then from that knowledge, grow in our consistency in our living. So what I want to close with is for you to think about, how will you grow? How will you grow in your knowledge? How will you grow in whatever areas of these sort of consistency issues that James has raised? What practical steps are you going to make? Maybe at the end we'll do what James says and pause and be slow to speak. Maybe when you get home, write them down. Take some steps, slow down and speed up. Slow down in your response time and your speaking. Slow down in your anger. Speed up in your practice, in your generosity, in living out this stuff. Be consistent. And we'll come back to all this. And you'll need to come back to find out more.